month, we showed you where the malfunctions were. But we thought this would be a more realistic chart because it gives you the whole picture for the 90 days. Next slide. The last slide is for Metro Access. Metro Access continues, ridership continues to be 16% to 18% higher. The on-time performance is 91%. But the missed trips is something that we look at too.
On the rehabilitation of the various lines, the red line particularly was brought up in the blue line. I thought we talked about eventually having a similar statistics, visible statistics for all the lines, in other words, by line, not just the overall average, so we can kind of monitor the individual lines. So I would encourage maybe, and I don't necessarily need to see a graph, but certainly some statistics per line, you know, each line and how well they're doing with regard to on-time performance. In particular, as we approach the major rehabs, that will be a more useful figure to look at because I think you're going to see some reduction in service availability. So that's a request and also a comment.
We'll provide that.
Any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, Mr. Francis, thank you for your presentation. We have an action item, and Mr. Kent would like to come to the table.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, members of the committee. I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce Mr. Glenn Millis from the Department of Access Services, who will be presenting our fleet management plan to you this morning. Thank you.
Good morning again. The purpose of this is to provide the board information on Metro Access fleet, and there's a much larger document that's in your package than this presentation. We've discussed it with the JCC, and we'll continue to work with them as questions arise. The tool, this plan, the fleet plan, is a tool that will be updated every year. It's our primary means of managing the fleet. It does a couple things for us. It projects the anticipated growth that will be needed in the Metro Access fleet to accommodate all the new demand for the service. And it documents the number of vehicles that will have to be replaced on an ongoing basis from year to year to make sure that the fleet stays reliable and we can provide quality service to our customers. The plan is a plan. It does not obligate the board to fund any of the vehicles in the plan. But it is a document that is required by the FTA since some federal funding has been used to obtain Metro Access vehicles. And I'm going to walk through some of the this page, and I'm going to provide some information that's not on the page but comes from the plan as I do that. We have had about 550% growth since 1998 in Metro Access, between 1998 and 2008. That works out to about 16% annual growth per year. It's been pretty consistent. The numbers will vary. The trend line is almost straight. That is what's happening. And the growth means that we've gone from about 262,000 trips in 1998 to about 1.7 million this year. About 20,000 customers are enrolled in Metro Access, and that number we anticipate will grow. By 2013, the forecast is that ridership will increase from 1.7 to 2.8 million trips per year. So another 1.1 million trips in the next 5 years. And again, that's fairly consistent with what we've seen in the past. You know, one of the things you might ask is what's driving growth. According to about 50% of the living in our service area have a disability. That's about 480,000 people. Now, that doesn't mean that all of them are qualified to use Metro Access. Not all will want to use Metro Access, but the base is there to support a continued demand for the service. And if you look at us compared to other cities, Chicago, L.A., New York, and Philadelphia all have higher percentages of persons with disabilities within their service areas. You know, the question I guess one might ask, 8 million trips a year. And, you know, having told you about Chicago and L.A. and New York, you know, what I can share is that Metro is in the mid-range on both the numbers of people with disabilities and the numbers of paratransit trips provided. So we're not unusual, we're not unique, sort of in the middle of the pack. And what's happening to us is happening in other cities. We're about seventh in the number of vehicle revenue miles operated throughout the country, it's about 11 million per year at this moment. The plan, and our consultants, Hickling, Lewis, and Broad, projected we'll have about 11% growth over the next 5 years. That's slightly less than we're doing now. And one of the reasons why we think it'll be a little less is as the systems get older, they're starting to grow a little slower. And we're also taking some steps, which we'll be sharing with the board, on what we're going to do to try and divert some of this demand onto our accessible fixed route services. We'll be doing that in the months to come.
Any questions?
Yes. Yes.
You pointed to our increase, and I happened to look through that other very vast document, and it shows, I guess it's PITSCR, is that PITT?
I think so, yes, ma'am.
And what would be a decline in ridership versus where we see such a phenomenal growth? It's, I'll tell you, it's page 36 in your actual plan.
Well, Pittsburgh actually is a model that we've been looking at very closely because they actually have done quite a few innovative things in demand management. In fact, it's one of the models that the Access Services team is going to adopt. Telling you a little more about it next month in terms of how we're able to mitigate the demand by leveraging accessible fixed route services and taking a more progressive approach to eligibility certification.
Well, if I can, I'll turn to the vehicles and what this ridership growth means to us. The next 5 years, the vehicle fleet is going to increase from 458 vehicles last year to 926 vehicles in the year 2013. 466 vehicles, additional vehicles, will be required to accommodate that growth. At the same time, all of the 458 vehicles we now operate will be required to be replaced. And there will be some other replacements of some other vehicles that will be needed along the way. There will be a total of 1,184 vehicles that will be needed to meet demand and replace the vehicles that we have in service right now. One thing I want to assure the board is, you know, although the FTA only requires 4 years and 100,000 miles out of these vehicles, we currently operate these vehicles to about 5 years and between 150 and 300,000 miles. The plan that's being shown to you today shows that we are exceeding the FTA minimum in all cases. We have to be very careful when we do that because we want to make sure that we have a reliable service, but we also want to get the last we can out of the vehicles as efficient as possible while we do that.
Excuse me.
Yes, Mr.
That's an interesting comment, only in a sense that are we seeing more breakdowns during the fifth year, so to speak? I mean, are we maintaining the availability of these vehicles?
That's a very good question, and it's a driver for why you need to replace vehicles in a timely manner. As the vehicles grow in age and as they incur mileage, they break down more and more often.
But we're not seeing that.
We are in 2010, about 50% of our fleet is going to be about 1 year over our minimum, which is higher than the federal minimum.
Let me see if we can clarify the question. I think the question relates to not what age it is over the minimum, but what is the frequency of breakdown at that age, and whether or not we're seeing such frequency of breakdown when we exceed the federal age, and whether or not that suggests that maybe we should not be exceeding the federal age.
Well, some of this is a question of fleet management that we don't. But what happens as the vehicles get older is certainly the maintenance cost increases. When you do preventive maintenance inspections, you find more things to fix. That doesn't necessarily mean that we would manage in a way where the age of the fleet would become apparent by breakdowns that happen on the road. It just means that we have to put out more effort and more attention to maintain them proactively so that that doesn't happen. I don't think that's what we would want to be showing you, is that, you know, that, well, they're older,
but
so now they break
happening?
Down.
Is it happening that they're not available?
It is not happening in terms of breakdowns, but there are some vehicles that when they reach that age threshold, we have had to make some decisions to park vehicles because they don't become feasible to operate after a certain point.
If I may ask a further question here. You project what type of vehicles will be required for expansion, and at some point, if we are exceeding the FTA minimum, and that's only a minimum. I mean, it's more of a guidance in terms of what they would allow in terms of replacement vehicles and justify replacement. But the real key is whether or not it's cost effective for us to continue to operate the vehicles beyond that minimum. And our maintenance costs growing, and whether or not replacement becomes more cost effective than maintaining old vehicles with increased maintenance costs. And I think that's the nature.
I think my concern was, is that 4 year minimum really a realistic number in today's society? And are we doing a good job now without any significant increase in maintenance costs? My experience as a fleet manager in local government, we frequently had 6 and 8 year lifespans on vehicles, not 4 years. So that may be a very optimistic and a very aggressive number from the point of view of FDA, but again, I'm just asking the question.
Sure. Mr. Benjamin.
I guess where we're going, and I guess the key question is, have you done analysis of the increased costs of maintenance versus the life of the vehicles so that we do have a life cycle cost analysis that would allow us to say what is the best place to replace them?
We do have experiential data on that. I mean, that was part of the rationale that went into the projections we provided.
I think we're asking for that information.
Yes, that's what I understand.
Show us the life cycle cost information that says this is the best place and this is why. This is how the maintenance cost goes up, and at this point it's really worthwhile replacing instead.
I agree, and we need to bring that information back to you in detail.
Okay. And to summarize the discussion, the replacements in the fleet plan do reflect that. You know, it's our intention to keep the fleet reliable and operate as economically as possible. There is a we do want to add timely vehicles in a timely manner. I think it's important to stress this so that they will be able to accommodate demand as it grows and not after it happens. The fleet plan provides for that growth in an orderly manner so that that we can meet the ADA and the FTA regulations that say that we're not allowed to say no when people ask for trips. Provides enough vehicles to provide the trips that are required when they are asked for. And again, you know, I heard the board's concern, and we do have that information. We also want to operate a quality service that's reliable, but also an efficient manner. And the plan provides for a fleet that is reliable in a state of good repair. It replaces about one-fourth of the fleet each year and will maintain an average vehicle age of about 2 years. Vehicles will have about 100,000 miles on them. So in summary, if I can, the plan is a tool that will be updated every year, reflect our current requirement, our current experience, and next year's needs, so it will always be current. And it will document the fleet growth and the fleet replacement that's needed to meet our legal requirements and to provide a reliable service. I want to emphasize again that the plan is only a plan. It does not obligate the board to fund projected vehicle purchases We'll be returning to the board on an annual basis to give you the current element of that LEAP plan. But the plan is required by the FTA since some federal money is involved, and board approval is being requested today. I can try and answer any questions.
Benjamin.
I'm ready to move this, subject to exactly what you said, that this is a plan and not a commitment to buy any particular set of vehicles. Also, and also subject to your coming back to us with that life cycle cost analysis, yes, so that we have a better idea as to where that trade-off point is. I have a question which is probably not exactly on target here, but it's one that I would ask later in the Finance Committee, but you seem like the better people to ask it of. You've been talking about the ridership increases, and I believe this year we did project a 16% increase, and you're experiencing 18% increase. Is that right? So we're getting more riders than we projected, and that fits with some of the cost numbers that are coming out. You're way over budget in terms of the cost of providing the service, but your revenues are substantially down. How do we get more riders and much lower and much higher costs, but much lower revenues?
Some of the decrease in revenue is due to the compensation that we provide riders for free fares for different circumstances, for late trips. That's something that we have been giving back to the customer for some time, and that does affect what we report in terms of the average fare collected. So that has been somewhat of an offset to what you've been seeing on the trend. When we come back next month, we have a comprehensive report on everything that we're doing to manage the demand and to give you more detail on ridership trends we're observing and what we intend to do to manage the financial aspects going forward.
Well, would you please, when you come back to us next month, look into that item as well and try and it seems like that would be an awful lot of trip. You're 10% under budget in your revenues while you're 20% over budget in your service costs. That would be an awful lot of trips that are being missed, and maybe we need to start looking at what we're doing and how we're doing it. So if you could analyze that and come back and give us a better rationale for exactly what is going on here, that would be very, very helpful. Given that, unless there is any other...
just have a question.
One question.
I notice on page 23 of the larger report, there's a reference made to phasing out the sedan-type vehicles and going to more of the van-type of vehicle. And I was wondering if you've assessed what the fuel consumption implications are of that and what type of an impact that might have to the overall budget.
Well, one thing I did want to clarify when we said that we were moving away from the sedans is that it does not necessarily mean that everything goes to a van configuration. What we meant was that we wanted to switch to vehicles that were accessible. There are smaller, better models of vehicles out there that can be accessible and also economical in terms of fuel. So it was not meant to say that everything becomes a van, because clearly the van does have a lower fuel economy than a simple sedan would have. But what we're trying to achieve, though, is the ability to deploy accessible vehicles across the service area, because we find that that type of flexibility helps us to stay on time. When there are changes in the schedule and you send over a vehicle spontaneously, it's important that it be accessible.
Right. Well, that's good. I hope we would look at that third type of vehicle critically, especially since we've seen the rising fuel costs, and we may not, even though they've gone down a little bit lately, that may not be sustainable. And so if there is a product out there that provides the service that we need that's not as fuel inefficient as some of the van models out there, that's a promising thing we should be looking at. So thank you.
I'll add one question to that. Thank you. Are there others in this region or this area who are buying similar vans or vehicles?
Well, absolutely. In fact, this one point I wanted to add to the presentation. This is the first time that there has been a paratransit fleet plan, and given the size of the fleet, the fact that we're now using, actually with your approval for FY09, for the first time we used Metro's buying power without having to pay a contractor markup and taking advantage of a state contract in Virginia, we were able to get a lower price per vehicle using the same model that they were purchasing. So, I mean, we've actually been able to realize some economic savings, and, of course, we look forward to applying those to all future purchases based on what you've seen in our projections here this morning.
Great. That's exactly where I was going. So you're already there. So congratulations. Any further questions?
Move adoption of the Metro Access Fleet Plan.
It's been properly moved and seconded that we move the adoption of the fleet plan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
The ayes have it, and the motion passes. Thank you very much, Mr. Kent. We have our first information items. Chief, if you would come to the table.
Good morning, Kathy. Congratulations for bringing Virginia.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, other members of the committee. The Metro Transit Police will be presenting the crime statistics and other significant facts for your information. As has always been the case, the crime statistics reflect a five-year span, and as we look at aggravated assaults, we're tracking to be below last year's average. We're also tracking to be below the motor vehicle theft averages. We're tracking to be somewhat above in the larcenies, and most of those pertain to vehicle damage thefts at our parking lots. We're also tracking to be above the numbers from robberies. Most of those also includes juveniles stealing iPods, things of that nature. At the request of the board at the last meeting, we were asked to sort of separate the Part 1 crimes from the vehicles to non-vehicles. And as you look, Gallery placed the top 10 locations in the District of Columbia, those that have parking facilities. 75% of the crimes, Part 1 crimes in the District of Columbia, are crimes against persons, versus 25% of those crimes are crimes against vehicles, as the district has less parking facilities. As we move on to the next slide, in the case of Maryland, Maryland, 23% of the crimes are non-vehicle are vehicle-related crimes. The majority of the crimes in Maryland, 77%, are those that are associated with vehicles, and they have the more parking facilities there. The case of Virginia, 33% of the crimes are non-vehicle crimes, and 66% of those that pertain to vehicles, and mostly they are catalytic converters, they are airbags, there are things that pertain to the vehicle themselves. Going back to the probability of being a victim of a Part 1 crime, 2.63 per million customers, which is still relatively low as far as we're concerned. In 2008, the Metro Transit Police received 45,523 calls for services. We made over 1,300 arrests, issued 4,900 criminal or civil citations, and wrote over 2,000 fare evasion citations. Relative to hiring, we recently hired 16 recruits since the June 26th board approval of the 28. Three of those recruits speak Spanish. These three recruits are in addition to the 15 Metro Transit Police officers that currently speak Spanish. In addition, the MTP as officers who also speak a variety of other languages, and that information is depicted on the next slide. Arabic 3, Chinese 2, French 4, German 3, American Sign Language 3, Italian 1, Korean 1, Spanish 18, and Vietnamese 1. I think that concludes the information I'm sharing with the board members today.
Thank you very much for the expanded information and answers, hopefully some of the questions that some of the board members raised specifically. And thank you for addressing those. Mr. Giancola.
Chief, on the robberies, page 60, obviously there's a trend going up, and we're only through 9 months of the year, and we're already exceeded last year's. Can you give me some sense of what the robberies are? Because, you know, clearly knowing what they are, maybe we can have some public relations campaigns or other kinds of outreach to our riders about those kinds of crimes that are occurring, and picking the robbery area. Are they the the iPods or?
Yes, they're the iPods, mostly juvenile snatching, robbery snatches, where they are snatching electronic information, equipment from people. One has to also look at the fact that this chart does not depict the increase in ridership. So as the metro has expanded and ridership has increased,
the rate has gone down.
Absolutely. But those are the types of efforts that we are diligently working with the local police departments to come up with a task force to address those robbery-related activities, predominantly in the District of Columbia and predominantly at Anacostia.
Thank you.
Further questions? Catherine?
On page 64, where you talk about the Part 1 crime in the metro system, the $2.63 million, that's our system, and it does not reflect jurisdictional data?
No, it's all-inclusive.
If I think this was a point I was making the last time in terms of trying to paint the picture of what Metro's description would be versus what, say, the region as a whole or the region per jurisdiction. Because I think what your numbers tell us is that while any crime is too much crime, we're relatively safe.
True.
Is that true? And that's the case that we say through most of our jurisdictions. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
I think it would be good to put it in a perspective as well.
What we will have to do, many of the reports of crime depending upon the jurisdiction may be 2 years old, mm-hmm. and so it's getting up to the date, current information from the Washington Council of Governments, and so we can report the last report to them as it relates to the crime in the whole Washington metropolitan area.
And I would not be interested necessarily by jurisdiction. I would like to know average, through our jurisdictions, what is our Part 1 crime statistic per million, as you're saying here. Because I think it would be, what I hope it conveys is that we're not any different, or at least we might be better as a system.
And that would reflect the entire inhabitants of the Washington metropolitan area versus those that actually ride a lot.
I'm sure they have in each jurisdiction.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
On page 60, I guess that is, where there's a breakdown by specific Part 1 crimes, as opposed to those in the slides that follow, you distinguish in those slides that follow between vehicle or non-vehicle. That means related?
Yes, sir.
So if I look at the previous page from this one, on slide 60, I don't know which slide number that is, but this is the one, yep. The larcenies, for instance, a large number of those are vehicular.
Absolutely.
So they wind up in the vehicle column in the subsequent slide.
Yes.
Any idea how much of the larceny, in fact, is vehicular related? And roughly?
Roughly, I would say approximately 95%.
Okay. So this is a lot of people breaking in to steal that.
Absolutely.
GPS device or
airbag, you name it.
All right. So if we were to pull that number out and put it together with the other one, I guess we'd see, you could then divide it by the total of Part 1 crimes, but it's going to be something on the order of 90% of our crimes are vehicle-related.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, Chief, thank you very much for your presentation. Our next information item, safety performance indicators.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. My name is Alexa Dupini Samuels, and today I'll be sharing with you our safety performance indicators. So our rail passenger injuries, onboard injuries, we've decreased 26 from the first quarter at the same time this year versus last year. And for the month of September, there's been a 60% decrease at fewer injuries and incidents occurring. Also, for the rail passenger injury rate, it's gone from 0.1 to 0.4, which is a 60% reduction in the rate, as well as for the month of September, from 0.08 to 0.03, 62.5% decrease. The number of escalator injuries have also decreased for the quarter, as well as for the September variance, from 7 to 11. There's been a 4% incident change to the positive. We've had 4 more incidents and for the month of September this year versus last year. Next slide. Our bus safety indicator shows the same positive trend. All of them are trending downward. For the first quarter, bus passenger injuries, there was a 25% decrease from 49 to 37. The number of preventable bus collision rates, there was a decrease of 27%, as well as for the passenger injury rates as well, 34% decrease. For the month of September, they have continued to trend downward from the same for the month of September, FY08 versus 09. Metro access. And for our last safety and performance indicators, the metro access, also the number of passenger injury rates for the quarter last year versus this year has decreased by 1. The collision rate has also decreased by 18% this fiscal quarter versus last fiscal quarter. And for the month of September, it went from 0.045 to 0.33, a decrease of 27%. And the passenger injury rate has also shown a decrease of 20% for the quarter and 12% for the month of September. That concludes the safety performance indicators. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much. We appreciate your report, Mr. Zanini.
First, how do any of these numbers relate to goals that we set at the beginning of the year?
They relate directly to those, and off of the top of my head, I do recall, you know, reductions of 10% is the goal for employee injuries, and also from my standpoint of vehicle accidents, I really don't recall what the number was, but this exceeds the goals set by the board.
I would suggest that, and this is well presented, quantifiable data, in a way that I think is easy for us to understand and to compare from period to period. I think in the next year when we go to set goals, we ought to try and set them in a way that keys directly off the way this data is presented.
Right.
And be able to, when we show it, say, here's where we were last year, here's the goal we set for this year, here's where we are, so that we have a pretty clear indication of progress or lack thereof.
All right, and we will take a look, too, for the next report and apply the goals in such a way that you can look at that measurement to some degree. I understand what you're saying going into next year.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Further discussion? Thank you all very much for these reports. We will now proceed to, we're going to do a switch on these next two items, if we could. Will that be too disarming for you, Mr. Cato?
It might. I think we can handle that,
okay,
Mr.
Good.
Chairman.
Good. I thought you could. If we could do smart trip first, followed by the elimination of the paper transfers discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response to the Board of Directors' concerns about the lack of progress on our Smart Trip program, and also as a result of the audit conducted by the IG, we've made some reforms, and I've taken some steps to improve the reliability as well as the schedule for the program itself. There was an independent assessment that was completed in May of this year.
Mr. Cato, can I interrupt you just for a second?
Because yes, you may.
I requested at least a bit of this report at the last meeting. I wanted to know specifically about the explanation for the issues relating to the implementation. And what are you going to be talking about?
I hope so. I'm not sure I'm going to address what you want.
We just want the information because so much of the region is ready to go and a part of the region is not ready to go. And I thought it would be constructive and contributing if we just had a sense of what the issues were so that we could better understand what was happening.
Well, some of the issues in the past is indicated in the audit by the Inspector General. There were issues with our contractors and delivering some of the segments of the program based upon the schedule that we negotiated with them. The other issues were, to be honest, our failure to do certain or achieve certain milestones agreed to under that contract. But those things have been corrected. And as we move forward, and as I go to the next page, it might tell you, answer the question of what the products are themselves. The first is the issue of a point-of-sale device, which will expand the number of locations that we have for our customers to load value to the Smart Trip card itself. Now, the number of expanded locations will be discussed in the presentations on transfers. There are many in use, but we are expanding the number in significant amounts over the next couple of months. And we expect that we have a significant number of point-of-sale devices by August of 2009. From a product standpoint, by September of 2009, we will be able to put specific passes on the Smart Trip cards, all the passes that we currently have, as well as all the regional passes within the system. And hopefully it will occur before then, but this is the date that our consultants and our staff realistically feel that that will be available. In addition, at that time period, we will have a self-service website, which will allow our customers to view their transactions and register for any other point-of-service features that we will offer, including the auto-load feature, which is scheduled to be fully implemented by December of 2009. And that will allow our customers to automatically update their Smart Trip cards at any metro rail gate or any fare box within the metro bus system by utilizing either their credit cards or their checking accounts. When the amount falls below a certain level and specified by the customers, it will be automatically updated as they enter the system.
Question?
Yes.
Jim.
Questions, Mr.
Clarification on that. What it says on the screen and what you just said sound slightly different. What you just said indicated that the customer can have a feature activated so that I have a certain amount I want loaded on my card, and when the level goes below that, it automatically draws off the account.
Yes, that's what I said.
This is what people who use Easy Pass for tolls on the East Coast may be familiar with. I know through Maryland that, and I apply the other ones too. You hook it to your credit card, and they draw off, so you maintain the balance. That says at the gate or bus fare box. What does that mean?
That means when you tap your card at the gate, if your card has fallen below the specified level, it will automatically update the card to a higher level that you requested when you registered with us.
You're saying that that's actually where the data information gets transferred to the chip that's on the card?
Yes.
But it's really happening basically in accounts between Metro and the banking system.
Yes.
And it's getting essentially logged when you you tap the card and interfaces them.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And finally, the account link is required by the Internal Revenue Services. We have to separate transit services or transit fares that are given by employers from parking benefits on the Smart Trip card. Right now, that's not separated, and the Internal Revenue requires that we do that. It is really a benefit to our customers to help them from a tax perspective to not pay taxes on transit benefits, but they are taxed, could be taxed on the parking benefits. We did get a one-year extension on this. This was scheduled to be completed by December of 2009. We're not going to have it by 2008, rather. We got a one-year extension to December of 2009. I expect it to be in place before then. But that's the date that we agreed to with the Internal Revenue Services to have that done.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Linton.
I want to make one correction. They neither pay taxes on the parking nor the transit, except that they're separate benefits.
All right.
So neither one of them are taxed.
I stand corrected on that, but it will separate the benefits for those companies as well as the individuals. Next page, please. These are some contractual milestones, and I really don't want to go through all of these in details. I just provided it to you for information so you understand where we are from the contractual standpoint. I think one of the key steps that we're taking really is the next slide, which deals with how do we move forward and offer other services under the Smart Trip program, specifically an open payment system. For an example, credit cards could be an option for payment, and there has been various tests throughout the country on a demonstration basis. And I'm recommending, too, that we explore this type of option by researching the industry for innovative approaches for an expression of interest type of approach that we would go out to the various banks and credit card companies to submit, ask them to submit interest in doing this type of program, what's their experience base. And once that happened, we will define the scope of work and issue a request for proposal in December, hopefully receiving the responses back in January. Currently, our resources are really working on meeting the IRS deadline, and so as a result, we will be utilizing the consultant approved by the board a month or 2 months ago to help us in this process. We believe that we will get interest from several different organizations, and we will review those and bring it back to the board from the standpoint of what are the costs, what are the implementation technical issues, and then with the timeline, giving the board the option of moving forward with that demonstration or deciding to take another approach. But we will have that back to the board hopefully by February of 2009.
And for the discussion, Mr. Benjamin?
I just want to get a clarification here. What's up here says RFP, so that's a request for proposals in December. I heard you saying request for expressions of interest. Is that before December, or is that the December one?
It's actually the same thing. It's actually what we're looking at. The expressions of interest would be somewhat of a phase one approach to the overall going forward for procurement action. So,
and would that allow us then to negotiate with the people who've expressed interest in doing an award?
That's the intent.
I'd like to make sure that we're in a situation where we can, in fact, do that, and that we don't, after we get their expressions of interest, start all over again with an RFP and a whole new solicitation. I did also want to comment that, at least in my mind, and I think for many other members of the board, this is the future. This last page sort of trumps all the improvements that we're going to be making in 2009. All of those are important. All of those will make an enormous difference. But this is really where we're going. This is the ultimate for customer convenience. This is where the credit card that your bank gives you, and that is in your pocket anyway, gets used to get you through our fare gates and onto our buses, so that you don't have to go get any form of fare media for us. You don't have to load anything onto a Magstripe card or a Smart Trip card or anything else. You just walk through the gate and you use it. You use the same credit card that you were using to buy groceries, the same credit card that you're using to buy clothing, the same credit card that you're using to buy candy.
Smart Trip card.
And that very same card is now being used in our system for our buses, for our rail, and our customer doesn't have to worry about all the fancy stuff that we do. It also separates out functions. It says that the banks now do the money, the moving of money, and we do the moving of people, and that's really what we're all about. So in my mind, this is a critical and very, very important effort, and one that we really need to move on as expeditiously as possible.
Thank you. Mr. Zimmerman?
So I just want to understand from Benjamin. You're saying once you get to this level, I have a credit card, I have to set up somehow that it works with Metro.
No.
Yep.
You have a credit card and the very same credit. What happens is banks are now issuing credit cards with the same electronics in them that we have in our Smart Trip card. Slightly different protocol.
So in principle, you wouldn't even need a...
You don't need to set anything up. You just walk into our system with the same credit card.
But what happens, I mean, suppose imagine I carry three of these credit cards. I'm told the average person has, what, 22 credit cards?
I don't have any, so some of you got a lot of them. But if you've got more than one and you walk through, which one does it hit?
It'll hit whichever one is closest to the target. So if you want to choose, if you carry 20 that are all like this, and you want to choose which one, you're going to have to make sure that that one's closest to the target.
Closest to what? Okay, go ahead.
If you want to look at this, this has already been done in New York City. They've tested this for 2 years, and it's been expanded to PATH and New Jersey Transit, including buses. And London is actually starting to do the same similar pilot. Paris just announced this week that they're going to do a similar pilot. And the idea is that you will act, the banks are now distributing contactless cards. Some of you may have them already in your wallet that says PayPass. What you would have is a reader on the turn gate that will actually be able to read that card, and the deduction will take place right out of that. So you could use the same fare media from Paris to London to WMATA to New York to wherever, and it doesn't require all of the operations, and no longer will we have to worry about distributing smart trip cards. You won't have to worry about having all these devices at the stores.
Except for people that don't have credit cards.
Well, that's not.
There's
solutions for that. For instance, do you have prepaid cards that you can buy now at your grocery store? Those prepaid cards can also be embedded with the same contactless chip. So when you can go into your grocery store and you have all those places where you can buy prepaid cards to pay for at Borders and everywhere else, those same prepaid cards can be embedded with the contactless chip. So the distribution channels will actually be broader than the ones that we have now.
How many years away is this?
It's going on right now.
Look at this.
How many years away till we could implement it?
Here, look at what I'm holding in my hand. I think many of you have seen this.
That question I think we should put to Mr.
Okay. Actually, that's what we will find out from the expressions of interest as well as the RFP process. Again, New York has been doing it, as mentioned, in Pennsylvania.
Stop, when you say New York's been doing it, you mean they tried a pilot where in a few places they did it. Go to New York now, they're not doing this.
Right.
They're using very much an old-fashioned technology that's behind what we have here.
They're doing both. They're doing both. Both are in operation. One, several lines do use
30,
this technology.
30 stations and 85 turn gates.
Well, can't we get, gentlemen? You know, let's see if we can get this information together. We don't have it in front of us. I mean, perhaps even a subsequent report on these issues.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chairman, the point is, this is very exciting, obviously, and
right.
You know, I think it's great. But I also want expectations to be realistic. You know, it takes a while to implement these things. There's pilots for all kinds of things. There are people using fuel cell buses out there. You ain't ordering a whole bunch of fuel cell buses anytime soon. The hybrids aren't fully, you know, technology and new systems are hard to implement. That's why we're struggling with this one that we've had ongoing for a good number of years now, and its full capacity is only going to be available to us in a little over a year from now. Getting an idea of how much time there is between when this system is fully operational, doing everything we want it, and when we might be implementing a new system will be very important for us understanding how much we invest in the old system and all the other issues that arise out of that. I do think we need to get some kind of picture of, you know, it's great all the gee whiz. I know the technological capability is there. It can be done. But implementing it all throughout a system is another matter. And as far as I know, no system in the world has done this.
Well, I think it sounds like we're having a disagreement, but there's nothing really to disagree about. We need additional information, and it's been requested. And can't we just await that additional information?
Yeah, I'd just like to... If you will acknowledge me, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Wait for you,
that I think the RFP and will actually shed light on the questions that Mr. Zimmerman has requested. But since I've spent a lot of time on this issue, I will tell you that, quite frankly, it's not new technology. It's actually 50-year-old technology. So some of what you think about that you incur with your existing problems with your smart card doesn't exist. So it's not using new technology. It's adapting to the existing global financial market system that's already in place, and you will find that the implementation time, primarily because you don't have as many touches and as much engagement in hardware and software as you do in your current system is a lot quicker. But we'll get to those issues as we get the information from the RFP and the responses.
Mr. Perry, I would like to make one more comment because I think it's important. This card is a credit card. This card works in our system today. There are 5,000 people using this in our system today. The difference between this card and what we're talking about here is this one works like a Smart Trip card. This is a Citibank credit card, and it says Smart Trip up in the corner. It works like a Smart Trip card, and what it does is load the value onto this card, and then you use it. The difference between this card and what we're talking about here is you never load the value. What happens is, as you go through the system, your credit or debit card, your credit or debit account gets charged directly right away. That's the difference. It's what happens in the back room, not what happens at our gates or anywhere else. So the really difficult technical stuff is already done. We're doing it.
Okay. Ms. Hutchins?
I'm sure that there's caution to the questioning, but I think there was it looked as though there was an answer, because there is, the question is, the January 09 date talks about the phase one RFP response, and I guess the question I thought Mr. Zimmerman was asking, and I'd like to ask, because our next presentation will generate a question for me as to what we're going to do with the transfer. And I think it's relevant in terms of how quickly this is implemented as to how we address other means of those folks who are today very comfortable in buying phone cards and can do their transactions very easily, yet we cannot accommodate them appropriately in the transfer piece. So is this close to
I've heard different time frames. That's the problem.
Okay.
I've heard time frames, you know, as long as 5 years. I've heard some shorter than 5 years. And I think, again, the best way to do this is do the RFP so that the experts come in, they have done this, and they would give us those timelines. I would be guesstimating now.
Further discussion on this point?
Question. I don't know if the RFP will cover this or not, but credit card companies take commissions on prices. This would seem to have fair implications.
That's one of the issues that would be in an RFP, and normally whenever we do a credit transaction, so if you load your Smart Trip card through a credit transaction, there is a fee. We pay a much lower fee than many other merchants would.
Nonetheless, that's an impact on what fare we're collecting. So that's an issue. And how it handles things like benefits and all that.
Great.
That will be in the RFP too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And a potential complication.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Linton.
Just remember that we are already paying those fees now, because we are. When people go to our purchase Smart Trip cards with their credit card, we're paying those fees. When you go to the auto load that will tap your credit card, you'll be paying those fees. So recognize that, recognize that, you know, you're already paying some of those fees now. So
what percentage of our customers are using the credit card to pay now?
I don't have those numbers.
Sure. But I bet it's not nearly as high as it's going to be when everybody is paying using credit cards.
But then your fare collection cost goes.
You and I can have some debates
all
about
it. All to be seen.
Right.
You know, we can have all this discussion when we have a little bit more information.
I'm sorry, sir.
Okay. Is there more discussion on this point? Anything more on this point? Do you have more to say on this?
No, I do not, sir.
Well, I have something I want to say, because at the last meeting, my distinct recollection, although it's not reflected in the minutes, which concerns me a little bit, is that I asked for a report on bus-to-rail transfers and the Smart Trip technology and what was holding us up in terms of the full regional implementation. And I recognize, and I believe I said this, and I've said this on various occasions, as you know, that there are fiscal impacts here which we need to be cognizant of. But all the same, I believe I asked for somewhat of a detailed report on what the status was of the bus-to-rail transfer technology and what was holding us up from this regional implementation. Do you remember?
Yes, I do remember that, sir, and it will be covered in the next item, which would have been the item before.
Okay, fine. Okay, then we can proceed to that item. You can deal with that first, actually.
No, we made a decision to accept with them.
No, 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 but we're on that item now. But we've just finished with the smart truck. So now we're going to this, and I'm saying you could deal with the regional implementation issues first. You could deal with the regional implementation issues first, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Just so I don't forget again.
We want that you forget, sir.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm Sarah Wilson with Corporate Strategy and Communications. I'm joined by Carol Kissel, our CFO, who will be addressing points related to the financial and operational impacts of the decision to eliminate paper transfers, as well as to give you an update on where we are with our communications. The main points that we are going to discuss today, number one, that smart chip penetration is deep enough to provide reliable data. What does that mean? That means that if you take the universe of all of our customers who are going to be affected by eliminating paper transfers, that about 38% of those customers are already using Smart Trip. And that's important because it provides a foundation for a point we're going to make in a couple of slides that will show some unusual relationships with regard to transfers. Next, that paper transfers are used at nearly three times the rate of Smart Trip transfers. That next point, that other transit properties have seen an increase in revenue and an increase in the usage of their smart cards when they also have eliminated paper transfers. Balance transfers, which is the point that Mr. Graham has raised, will have complex financial implications, and Carol Kissel will be speaking more to those implications. That there was a question that came up at the last meeting regarding the time savings of having our customers switch to Smart Trip. And we discovered that, not surprisingly, the boarding times are much faster with Smart Trip than with cash. One point that I neglected to mention in this list here is that the board has also authorized us to provide a three-hour window, which is going to expand from the existing two-hour window for transferring. And that'll be a huge benefit to our customers. And finally, that a robust communications program is underway. Just to give you a lay of the land here, this is the...
Well, are we going to interrupt it? Because if one person does this and asks questions, then do we want to hear the whole presentation?
We want to hear the whole presentation.
Yeah, the whole presentation. If you could just hold it. I think that way we could give them the advantage of a talking about.
This slide just shows a typical distribution of how our customers pay when they get onto a bus in a typical month. We used August. It's the most recent month we had for our data. And you can see that 25% of our customers use cash. Another 16% use Smart Trip, which means when you get onto the bus, that's the first time you are being charged, and you'll be paying $1.25. So cash Smart Trip is folks who are paying $1.25 using their Smart Trip card. Cash regular is $1.35, regular cash. The bus paper transfer is those people who have a paper transfer in their hands showing that to the bus operator. The bus Smart Trip transfer, those are folks who have gotten onto a bus first and using their $1.25, and then this is just the free transfer that they get using their Smart Trip card. Rail paper transfer is only about 1.5%. We rounded that up to 2. Those are folks who are going into the rail system, punching the rail transfer machine and using that paper. The rail Smart Trip transfer, those are folks who have already used rail, getting onto bus, and they tap their Smart Trip card, and we charge them 35 cents for that transfer. The Flash Pass is very popular, and that is the unlimited pass that we offer, $11 for a whole week of bus usage, or half that price if you're over 65 or disabled. If you take out all of the population from that slide, all the people who are not going to be affected by transfers, and anybody who's transferring, anybody who's paying full fare when they first board, you take that universe, you can see that 62% of that universe of people are paying with cash and 38% are paying with Smart Trip. That was the point I was, my initial point of this presentation. That's important to understand because it provides the basis for the next couple of points about the relationship with transfers. Next slide. What we found among with cash and with people who are using paper transfers emanating from that cash is that for every one person who gets onto a bus, we provide two rides for every single person who gets onto a bus and pays the full fare. And that is important when you go to the next slide and see the relationship, comparing that to the number of people who get on, who transfer using their Smart Trip cards. That for every one person who pays the full fare with their Smart Trip card, we're only providing 1 1/3 of a ride. It's a relationship that gives us some concerns, and a relationship that we would expect to change were we to move ahead with the elimination of paper transfers. What we would expect to see with eliminating paper transfers is probably something in between those two relationships. Next slide. Carol Kissel is going to talk more about the financial implications with regard to this elimination of transfers.
Based upon the analysis that Sarah has just provided to you, the relationship between the paper transfers and the Smart Trip transfers, we do know that when other transit agencies have eliminated paper transits, they have achieved a benefit. And we have spoken about this at the last board meeting, at last committee meeting. In Chicago, the benefit was to $17 million on an annual basis, and then for Boston, it was $14 million. I think that the proper comparison to Metro is probably more like Boston, given that they are similar to us in terms of their comparable fares. However, I think they have half the ridership. So given that, we've determined initial estimates for the benefit of eliminating paper transfers on an annual basis is estimated at a $5 million amount. That is a very conservative estimate and extremely low. Given the fact that we had to make a forecast on this. I think some of the challenges that we had were just the information alone in order to determine that financial analysis. But be that as it may, that's the estimate that we're developing. If you go to the next slide, we have determined a more realistic cost impact that we can quantify pretty confidently on eliminating paper transfers. There are two cost avoidances there. Capital and operating. The capital cost avoidance is obviously the we would not have to replace the rail transfer dispensers, which we have 112 mezzanines and there are two per mezzanine. So we estimated that capital avoidance cost at $2 million. We also have an avoidance of bus transfer papers. On a six-month basis, that would be $180,000 that we would not have to purchase. And then netting that against some of the promotional costs that we are incurring on the outreach and advocacy for this, it nets to a net cost avoidance of $1.6 million rounded up. The revenue impact, as I indicated, for this particular year is half of the $5 million, and total revenue impact with the cost avoidance is a little more than $4 million. On an 18-month basis between this January and for fiscal year 2010, we would achieve a $9 million savings. With regard to the specific question that you raised, Mr. Graham, the implementation of the balance transfers that will accompany this elimination of paper transfers, at the last board meeting, you inquired about this, and this is the result of the analysis. Today, currently, the bus-to-rail transfer discount there's no bus-to-rail transfer discount. As you know, you must have a magstripe card to get through the gates, and that's why there's no bus-to-rail transfer discount. However, there is a 90-cent rail-to-bus transfer discount currently. With the new Smart Trip technology, the balance transfer will be possible, and as a result of a resolution that was passed in 2004, we were authorized by the board to create the balanced bus-to-rail and rail-to-bus transfer, which would then fundamentally set the discount at 50 cents each way. This would take effect only after the installations are completed at each one of the regional bus systems. And as of mid-October, all of those have been completed. I think Prince George's County was the last one, and that has been completed as of mid-October. Two things to understand before we implement this, now that we're set up to do it, is there is a shift of revenue And when the board approved this in 2004, I believe there was a consultant, Booz Allen, who analyzed the shift in revenue between modes within Metro, between bus and rail, as well as between jurisdictions and Metro. And that would reflect the subsidy transfer that I'm referring to here. When that analysis was done back in 2004, our comment here is that since 2004 and now, we've had two fare increases that have effectively should be changing that analysis. When the consultant did it before, the analysis was that the shift in mode would be $2 million between Metro Rail to bus. Given that we've had a couple of fare increases over that period of time, I'm not sure that that analysis is still valid, and my recommendation is that we would want to assess that before we went forward on this. The impact to the customers as well is also a consideration that we would ask you to look at, only because as we implement this elimination of paper transfers in January, we are hoping that it goes smoothly with the outreach that Sarah's group has done and the advertising that we're doing on this. And we would hesitate in terms of implementing something else which would potentially be perceived as a fair increase on the discount that they currently have. And we would caution against that for now.
One of the questions that came up in last month's discussion was about the speed with which people will be able to move as we convert more folks to Smart Trip. We did some in-house simulations using a fully functional bus fare box, just like the one outside here, and found that the boarding times were twice as fast with folks who were using Smart Trip cards than those who used cash. We recognized that some of that speed may be reduced by folks who are spending a little bit of time loading their card, but even with that, it's still a question of maybe punching three more buttons, actually one button and two swipes of the card. That amount of time, just mere seconds, that may that would cause a little bit of a loss of speed. But yet, even with that, we would not expect that people would be loading $1.25 onto their card every single time they board the bus. We would expect something like, you know, somebody loading $5 or $10 or even $20 once a week or once every couple of weeks. And that's what we find in the rail system. In the rail system, people don't pay a dollar; they don't load $1.65 onto their Smart Trip card every time they go to travel. They will use this, load the maybe, you know, $10 or $15 onto their card for use for the whole week. Next, to talk about our communications, there's a number of samples in the appendix here too. We have been communicating with all kinds of advisory groups, and have been particularly concerned those groups that will be that have the most need, and have dedicated a lot of time to outreach to social service agencies and to folks who may have limited English proficiency. This whole effort involves every single department in this entire organization. We've been working with our civil rights office to target outreach, to provide multilingual pieces of communication. We've reached out to our advisory groups and have taken some of the advice from groups like the Jurisdictional Coordinating Committee, Riders Advisory Committee, and Advisory Neighborhood Councils. Not all the advice is, some of the advice has to do more with the Smart Trip that you talked about before this presentation. We were mindful to be very inclusive. We have a broad spectrum of advertising, including mostly targeted on bus. Some folks had asked about, you know, television or radio, and our primary concern was reaching out to the customers on a day-to-day basis right on the bus. So now if you go onto any of our buses, you will see either on the exterior and the interior advertising about this change. Our next slide. We also wanted to remind folks that passes will continue to be sold. And you can see from that pie chart that we talked about earlier, 15% of our customers are already using some form of passes. All of these passes will continue to be sold, and for some folks it may make more sense to be purchasing passes rather than to be paying a la carte. A question came up last month regarding what will happen to folks who use rail passes who may be used to getting a bus transfer when they get onto the rail system. The fact is that we never priced that rail pass to assume a bus transfer. And so if we're going to assume that everybody who's using their rail pass is also going to be using a bus transfer, then we would need to relook at that, at the cost that we're charging, the price that we're charging for that pass. And finally, just to summarize what we've talked about today, we expect that the elimination of paper transfers to increase revenue and to decrease the amount of cost that we're currently putting out to provide paper transfers. If we continue paper transfers, it will increase costs for both bus and rail systems. The balance transfer that Carol Kissel described will have many implications, and we prefer to make sure that everyone is on the same page. When that decision was made about balance transfer, I think only two of the existing 12 board members were on the board at that time. So I think that's we may want to make sure that everyone is understanding the implications here. That boarding by smart trip is faster than boarding by cash.
Can we have attention, please?
Sure. My last point was about the balance transfer, that when the board voted on that 4.5 years ago, it was that there were only two of the board members who are on the board today were part of that board that made that decision. And so we would want to make sure that everyone who's here also is understanding those implications of that decision. The boarding by smart trip is faster than with cash. Our communications, customer communications, have been far-reaching, and in fact, within the next week or so, we'll start to be seeing a lot of flooding of our buses with paper hangers that will be coming down from the overhead bars. It'll be impossible to miss it. So we're going to have about 300,000 of those hangers being distributed over the course of several weeks. A bunch on a Tuesday, a bunch on a Wednesday, and a bunch on a Thursday. We are also looking to upgrade our outreach for Smart Trip. We're going to be we're in discussions right now with a major retailer in the region. I can't say who, but it's the kind of when we finish that negotiation by mid-December, we would expect to triple the number of locations where customers can buy Smart Trip cards. And finally, that our Metro Bus customers are smart and resilient, and they've demonstrated an ability to adapt to change. Our rail customers certainly ramped up when we ramped up our Smart Trip usage. Our rail customers certainly demonstrated that nimbleness, and we would expect our bus customers to do the same.
Thank you very much. A lot of people want to talk on the first round, but let me begin. I continue to be concerned about the distribution of free Smart Trip cards to poor people. And I was hoping that there might be an update within this report on those issues. My information indicates that in the District of Columbia, of the 19,503 cards provided to D.C. by WMATA, 6,400 have yet to be distributed, which is about a third. And recognizing that, you know, until this was imminent, people didn't maybe see the importance of this and having these cards. But the question that I would like to be updated on what has happened in terms of that distribution. But in addition to that, I would like to know what the general manager's staff recommendation is regarding whether we have distributed enough free Smart Trip cards, or whether we should contemplate more in order to get people over the hurdle. Let me conclude by saying that just to repeat something that nearly everyone knows, the situation that we are all anxious to avoid is somebody with lower income, fixed income, confronted by, you know, multiple fares because of the absence of the paper transfer, and maybe some complexities associated with understanding the new process and everything else. So that's what we're trying to avoid. I think it's very important that we do so. So can I have the answer to those two questions?
Well, the first part, dealing with the number of Smart Trip cards themselves, I agree with you that from the perspective of some of our customers, the value is right now. Maybe 10 board the bus is 125 versus 135, but it's far more of a significant value if paper transfers are eliminated. We determined that 50,000 that was the recommendation to the board and approved. There are some concerns. I mean, I don't know what those numbers are going to be. No one seems to know until people request the cards as we get closer to the January date. One of the actions that the board could take is to authorize me to distribute additional cards as needed up to, again, some maximum amount. That way we will be able to give cards to social service agencies if they determine that the demand is greater than what we have approved for.
Another alternative may be that when we go to distribute our tokens, and every month we sell about 23,000 tokens, adult tokens. These are tokens that are only sold to social service agencies, that perhaps for the month of December, when they come to pick those tokens up, in lieu of a token, that we're giving them a Smart Trip card with a preloaded $1.25. That the social service agencies would be paying that $1.25 to us, but not paying the extra $5 for that card. That could be another alternative. And that way, they would be set for the month of December. Folks could get used to using those cards. And then, you know, starting in January, we go back to the tokens for them.
Okay, so the second question was, can we have an update on the actual distribution?
We're getting that for you right now. But my understanding is that of the 50,000 that were distributed, let's be clear, all 50,000 cards were distributed to one single government agency in each of the jurisdictions, and it was the burden, it was the obligation of those agencies to determine what criteria they would use for distribution and then to also handle the distribution to however they saw fit. We didn't feel that it was our role to, you know, make clear criteria that criteria may differ among the jurisdictions. And so those 50,000 were distributed out to all the localities. And of that 50,000, we know that 19,000 still remain to be distributed. So that's where we are.
Okay. You are providing educational materials to the social service agencies.
Yes, we are providing educational materials to the social service agencies. We're providing, we're also conducting several meetings in December where folks can come in here and learn. This is sort of a train the trainer. So for any social service agency who's interested, they can come. We can walk them through it. We'll have that fare box machine that's out front here. We'll have that at those meetings. In addition, anyone who needs on-the-spot training or, you know, a one-on-one kind of thing, we're dedicating staff to go out to them. So the most efficient thing to do would be for us to have one whole meeting. We recognize that may not be possible with every social service agency. In those instances, we will send somebody out to describe all that.
Okay. Well, just to conclude, I think this is very important, particularly in light of the additional revenues that we anticipate achieving as a result of this elimination, that we do everything we can in order to cover this possible problem. Now, I think everybody wants to speak, I assume. So why don't we start over here and we'll just go all the way down. Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, there's obviously a whole range of things, and I'll just start on one issue. See if everybody else covers all the other ones I would have asked. But the one that particularly troubles me in this presentation concerns the balance transfer. Both the references in the presentation slides and what I heard from staff. We start out by on page 84, I guess, the statement that the resolution in 2004 authorized creation of balanced bus to rail, rail to bus transfers. We concluded by hearing staff say that they were concerned that maybe the people who voted on that aren't on the board now. And I have to say that I find it very troubling to have heard such a thing stated. This is a governmental body, and this is the policymaking board for that agency. And when the board speaks and in formal action adopts a resolution, that is the law as far as the staff is concerned. It does not change until the board decides to change it. The staff doesn't get to say, well, it's not the same people that were there before. It's still the law. And in 2004, we didn't give them permission to do something. We told them to do something. The implementation was delayed for technical reasons. Technical reasons, which we heard today, no longer exist. Therefore, they should be implementing this right now. Now, I've said in previous meetings that I was very concerned with
moving too quickly ahead on the elimination of paper transfers, something which on the whole I think is excellent and we need to do for most of the reasons stated. But I was concerned about moving ahead too quickly if we weren't ready to implement it in the right way. And one of the key things is it's taken us 4 years and we still don't have implementation of the balance transfer, which already should have happened. And when I see the kind of, and I don't know what else to say, but weasel words about complex financial implications, I mean, I don't understand why there would be anything we wouldn't know now, that, you know, after 4 years, that we're somehow going to know in another year. And I suspect the answer is that we actually do know what it is, and it doesn't necessarily serve the budgetary goals. But that would be all the more reason why I would want to see the whole thing done at once. We're going to pick up a lot of revenue from the reduced leakage, basically, from the transfer system, and that is a good reason by itself to do it. But when we implement it, we need to implement those features that also make more convenience for the customers who, in one way or another, may be causing some inconvenience to by making the transition. I would not support moving ahead with this without the balance transfer. But I believe that the current policy of the board is staff should be implementing balance transfer today, since the only excuse for not implementing it was eliminated last month from what we just heard from staff.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zimmerman. If I may, just before Ms. Hutchins introduce the new voting member from the District of Columbia, Mr. Neil Albert, who has been appointed by the District of Columbia. You have yet to be sworn in, so there may be a technical question about you voting. But without objection, I'd like him to be at the table as part of the committee. So welcome,
Thank
Mr.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you can speak.
Ms. Hutchins.
Thank you. Okay. Welcome, Mr. Albert. I look forward to you opening your mouth. My first question is regarding on the fiscal impact, and you talked about the cost reductions and the cost incurred. Each cart that's processed takes in the $5. When you consider that cost incurred of $350,000, does it what is it including?
The cost of the Smart Chip card?
Mm-hmm. That's the cost of the Smart Chip card is that's our cost.
Our
here.
Cost is $2.50.
Okay. Okay. So it's not the $5 that I. Okay.
No, that's the value of the card to the customer.
Okay. And so that number should be that number reflects which one?
It reflects the $250.
Okay. Not so the other $250 goes where?
And in addition, the cost will also include there's one cost for the actual card itself, and then these cards come to us not capable of being used. So in order to be used, we need to initialize them. There's an additional cost for that, and that's also captured here.
Okay. So we're comfortable with the number. It's just that the clarity that it is that $5 that the customer pays is not a cost to us completely.
That's correct. It's really the cost that the authority would incur to purchase those cards.
All right. I want to agree with Mr. Zimmerman regarding the balance transfer because I think that's where we expected we would be. And we heard last month from some jurisdictions that everybody was ready. We were only waiting for one. And while your last slide shows and speaks of the resiliency of our customers, I believe that really that resiliency is reflected, too, in what we're asking them to do every day. And I think by moving forward with the balance transfer, we would be impacting such a significant number of customers in a positive way. I think that it brings a great deal of opportunity for helping our customers also understand the benefits that come with the balance transfer piece, as well as the complexity of their use of the system. So I think we remove a lot of complexity that they already experience every day, as well as the cost. I have one other question. And on the 90 cents discount, the bus systems have been absorbing that. So that means that each jurisdiction has been absorbing the 90 cents discount?
Yes, that's true. That's correct.
Okay, and so that piece is not part of our cost as well. That's all I have at this point.
Ms. Hutchins, if I could just point out, when we talk about the impact to customers with a balance transfer, it's important to know that the cost for a customer who goes from rail to bus will go from 35 cents up to 75 cents for that. And so that's the sort of a customer impact that I think we want to make clearer.
Right. And,
and conversely, you know.
Experience, yes.
Okay. And then conversely.
Can I just make a statement? I actually misquoted. I apologize about the cost of the cards. I think I said 250, but it was 350. So
okay.
I just wanted to make that for the record. But it is included in the cost.
Mr. McKay.
In the interest of time, I'll say my questions have already been answered, but I will associate myself with Chairman Zimmerman and Kathy Hudgens' comments about this being rolled out at one time. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't do that. I have not heard a reason why we shouldn't do it, and in the interest of good customer service and less confusion, it only makes sense to do it all at one time. So, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Giancola.
Good morning, and welcome, Mr. Elbert. Good to have you here. I certainly don't have any specific questions. I certainly support what Mr. Graham said, and I appreciate the alternatives you mentioned about additional outreach to the poorest of our community as an outreach effort. But that's all I had to offer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Giancola. Mr. Lenta?
Am I correct now that the balance transfer, the technological issues that we have with that have been corrected, and that's ready to?
Yes, we could implement that program. Yes.
We can implement it.
Yes.
Okay. Is there any reason why we would not with this particular move forward?
No, nope, after what I've heard this morning, no, sir.
Good answer, Mr. General Manager. Let me ask one of the questions. Staff made particular reference to the fact that using Smart Trip would be quicker in boarding than using cash. That is not a revelation, quite frankly. That's one of the reasons why, you know, 10 years ago, whenever we went to Smart Trip, when I approved it in 96 or whenever it was, that was one of the reasons for doing Smart Trip. So that in itself is not a revelation. But let me just say that the analysis that we really needed was, what was the impact of auto or loading is what we wanted to be simulated, was the actual loading of a Smart Trip card at the fare box by those who did not have access to loading at a rail station. That was a simulation that would actually give us some information on the quickening and the delay of the dwell time of the boarding. Did you do that simulation?
Yes, and I apologize for not being more explicit about that. It's a cost of about 5 extra seconds on top of what it would normally take for somebody to be loading their money on there. It's a matter of hitting one button and then tapping your smart card twice.
The other question I had is that what is the financial impact to the customers who will no longer be able to do? I understand the revenue impacts for, you know, increased revenues, but what's the financial impact for the customers who, in fact, will now not have transfers, particularly those who can least afford to pay, in light of the fact that some of the information I know in the literature suggests that those who make multiple trips in going from home to work tend to be those who have low income and also tend to be going to multiple trips for a lot of different reasons, like dropping off at daycares, all the trip chaining issues that relate to that tend to be focused on those who have less income. What impact financially will be on those when we do the elimination of the transfer?
There are a couple of things. First, for someone who does the trip chaining, as you mentioned, there will be a benefit because, of course, one of the things the board also agreed to do was to extend the amount of time to transfer when we make this change. So now they'll have 3 hours to make unlimited numbers of bus trips within those 3 hours. So that's one thing. Another thing is the outreach to social service agencies. So if you're someone who is a client of a social service agency, low-income folks in particular, then those free Smart Trip cards that we offered will be available to you to facilitate the elimination of paper, to facilitate your travel. And so that's the kind of outreach that we're doing, and that's why we devoted a lot of staff time and energy into targeting exactly that population.
Unfortunately, there's a tremendous amount of working poor who work every day but never have impact or contact with social service agencies, who will not be part of your distribution for the free Metro cards, but who will be impacted by the loss of the transfer. So I still didn't get an answer to the question of what's the financial impact on the customer. We looked at the revenue gains that we will make. Some of those are due to cost avoidance. Some of those are due to how, you know, the loss of revenues for somehow transfers kind of slipping through the process. But there's also revenues that will be gained from those who will no longer get the benefit of the discount that comes from a transfer. So what is the impact on those individuals, the loss of the transfer?
To the individuals who, again, that even though their contracts aren't with social service agencies, there could be an option of how we give out smart trip cards. I'm not advocating we give one out to everyone. That's what Chicago did. And as a result, if the individual puts the money on the card on a daily basis, there was no financial impact. And we were trying to minimize that, but we would be guessing, again, what those numbers are. We will make every option, every opportunity to give cards out to individuals who need them, and part of the communications could be is to target exactly the group you're mentioning. And again, to encourage them to go to social service agencies and make more cards available to them. Because if they get a card, there's no financial impact.
Yeah, I'm finished.
Mr. Benjamin? It strikes me that the maximum financial impact ought to be $5 if you're unable to get a free card, that you buy one for $5. And in fact, if you're doing bus rail transfers, then you actually come out ahead because you're going to save money on every transfer because we've moved from 45 cents to 50 cents on the on that transfer. I just want to clarify what I believe is my understanding. Last January, when we approved the fare change, I believe we said that this January you would implement both the elimination of the paper transfer and the balance transfer. Is that correct or not?
No. I can check the resolution. I have it in here. I don't think that is correct. I think okay. It was only exclusively confined to the elimination of paper transfers. What happened last January, or what happened last December, was that we had a fare adjustment, as well as a whole menu of actions that were taken, including a fare adjustment and the elimination of paper transfers, as well as the elimination of tokens. The adjustment went into effect. The tokens were mostly eliminated except for social service agencies and school trips, and then the decision to eliminate paper transfers was tabled for a year. And so that's the year is coming
actually,
up now.
I remember it the way you did, and I remember also staff showing me that both were together, and I guess it happened when we approved the budget. That was with a budget approval, the two were tied, and that they would be implemented in January. I would encourage you to go back and look at that, because I believe I was looking at should they be separated versus put together. And the current position of this board is they will both be done, and they will both be done in January. So if we do nothing, you implement, and you've had a year to get ready to do it. So I presume that everything that you can do, you have done.
Yes.
Okay.
I just got to say, that's not my recollection. So. Let's confirm the fact that these were connected. I don't remember any discussion about the balance transfer, because we were awaiting the technology, and we, as recently as the last meeting, we were told the technology wasn't going to be available in the remaining jurisdiction until some later date. Now we're told it's done, which is good. Ms. Hewlett?
So it was either done last January, we think, either last January, or some of us think, or via the budget process. And Ms. Wilson, you can help me here. You're saying that you think that it didn't apply to both, that you think that the action in January applied to the paper transfers?
Correct. What I have, we had two separate actions taken by the board, one in 2004, which said, once all of the regional bus operators have installed Smart Trip throughout the region, that will be the trigger for the balance transfer. That didn't happen until a couple of weeks ago. And the dollar amount of that balance transfer was set at 50 cents for each for both rail and bus.
Okay.
So that was one action that was taken in 2004. Separately, you had an action that was taken last January that had the fare adjustment and all of that. And that's where it was, where the instruction was to eliminate paper transfers there.
Okay, by January 09.
By this coming, yes, exactly.
Okay. And so you think it was just that and that didn't apply to the balance transfers. But today you're saying, and I just heard the general manager say after the discussion today, he thinks that's fully implemented.
Yeah, I think it's just okay. Kind of coincidental that both of those things happened, that you know, the trigger for, back in 2004, that the board said the trigger would be once Smart Trip was implemented region-wide. That happened a couple of weeks ago on all the buses.
So, okay, so that we can do.
Technically, yes. Okay. Technically capable of doing that.
Technically, and you have the, and we're under an edict to do the paper transfer, elimination of paper transfers by January anyway,
yes.
as Mr. Benjamin said, if we do unless we do something to change that.
Right. Okay. Exactly.
So then we can do both. Okay.
Mary Yule.
Thank you. Just echo the comments both by my colleagues already with regards to the balance transfers and the fact that we need to find other distribution outlets. Dealing with social service agencies certainly is helpful, but it's not enough to reach those that aren't benefiting from social service outreach. Thank you.
Okay, are you finished now? Let me just see if this is the first round. Mr. Albert, do you have a comment?
Sure. First of all, thank you all for allowing me to speak. I just want some clarity on what you're doing to actually to do two things. One, engage the public in this switchover, which obviously any change in normal operation presents problems for folks who are accustomed to a standard way of using the bus system. So if you can educate me a little bit on what your outreach strategy has been. And a concern that I have is how are we ensuring that the folks that are most disadvantaged will be able to get the free trip cards with the least amount of disruption to their lives. I heard one of the board members talked about the multiple trips that some of the most disadvantaged of our residents have to make. So, and again, excuse the question, I'm new. So if you can provide some clarity, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. Last January, in addition to everything else that the board had authorized, they also authorized the distribution of 50,000 free Smart Trip cards to exactly that population that you're referencing. And so our approach in doing that was to distribute those cards according to percentages that are akin to our formula, our bus funding formula. And in the case of the District of Columbia, we distributed a little over 19,000 cards to one government agency in each jurisdiction. And with the instruction that those agencies then go ahead and distribute those cards as they saw fit. So whatever the criteria, whatever criteria they wanted to use, they could do so. To date, I think in the district, I just have updated numbers, a little over, almost 6,900 of those 19,000 cards have been distributed, leaving about 12,000 yet to be distributed in D.C. So there is a little bit of disconnect there. And what we've been trying to do over the past couple of months is to reach out to those social service agencies to advise them that you know we're here as a resource, that the benefits that their clients can derive from having the Smart Trip cards, and we'll be having some meetings in over the next few weeks to describe how the transfers or how the Smart Trip is used, how people can load tokens that social service agencies currently use, how they can load tokens onto those Smart Trip cards, and just to be available to the social service agencies for whatever they need from us.
You know, as we're thinking about it, we can do a second round. We can go back the same way on everyone who wishes to speak. But let me just, I'm happily surprised by the announcement that our region is now complete in terms of buses having smart trip technology. This is for those of us who have repeatedly mentioned this over time, me being one of them, this is very good news. It also is interesting for me that it becomes in some ways, or could become in some ways, our best advertisement for the importance of smart trip. Because if we can proceed to immediate implementation, and I see no bar, and no one has said anything about why we should be delaying, why we should be waiting. There's been a legal question raised by Mr. Benjamin, which I appreciate, and we can find out the factual response to that. But if we proceed to immediate implementation of the bus rail transfer, which could only be achieved through the smart technology, then that will send a message to everybody saying, oh my God, I got to get this smart trip card, because now I can move from bus to rail without an additional, you know, without an additional fee of any kind. And so, you know, I think it's, you know, I'm kind of having an aha moment here that this is better than any number of brochures and ads and everything else when we announce, and the media is all here. I can see them right in front of me, and they can help us announce that you can now transfer from bus to rail with your bus fare. And I think that's a terrific step.
Get a 50 cent reduction on your rail fare.
It's a 50 cents, but
yeah,
but
you got to be careful with the press.
What was it's a 50 cent. We do want to mention
50
that.
But cent
what was,
reduction on your
right,
rail fare.
But what was previously verboten, that's German, but you can't do it, is now permitted, and I think that's a very important step forward. And I had an additional question. I think it's going to help us in getting the message across that the smart trip cards matter. Is that the elderly, we have heard from elderly people who are concerned about the complexity of loading cards while standing, while getting on a bus and all of what's involved there, which is sometimes for this particular group of people is a chore to begin with. Has your simulation taken this into account?
One of the things that I need to remind everyone is that within 24 inches of that fare box is a human being who can walk people through any kind of confusion that they may have. And so the bus driver is there, the bus operators are there to assist. In fact, we're doing a retraining over the past month and continuing into this month, a retraining for bus operators to make sure that they're comfortable with the technology and with also explaining it to our customers. And so for people, you know, who maybe have limited English proficiency or who may have a need for a few extra, a little bit of extra time loading value, there is someone there to physically walk them through that process.
Okay, and that's good news. Did I hear you say, just one more final question, we're all just taking a little time, I know everybody's very anxious, but did I hear you say that in Chicago they gave a smart trip card to everybody? It was Mr. Cato.
Yes, I believe I said, I'm just looking for a confirmation of what I said.
Oh,
but the difference in those cities, though,
well,
was the cost.
Can I just get the answer?
It was Boston.
It was Boston, yes, that's
so
correct.
Could you just tell us what Boston did? And they still achieved how many millions of dollars in addition?
No,
rent?
Those are two different events.
Oh, two different events.
Totally different events.
Okay. Tell us what happened in Boston.
Yeah, can I?
Yes, you may.
Sorry. I had actually had some conversations with the CFO at Boston, and you're right, Mr. Benjamin. This number in here that references Boston really references the paper transfer elimination impact. Their cards are considerably less expensive than our cards are from a cost point of view. They're probably in the $2 range per card, and that just has to do with the technology that they've purchased over time. And they've made the decision to give out free cards. They did that a while ago, and I think that they've had some issues that were public to the MIT issues that the students had found about hacking into their systems, and they just made the decision giving free cards was a cost that they wanted to incur. So I don't know the value of that, though.
May I add, if I understand correctly, those were two different events at two different times.
Yes.
When they introduced the equivalent to our Smart Trip card as a cheaper card much later than we did the Smart Trip card, they introduced those for free. It was not in any way related to elimination of paper transfers.
Thank you very much.
All right, several little items, but I wanted to pick up on a couple of things that brought to light. First of all, on the price of the card, you know, when we brought the Smart Trip card in, it cost us $10 a card. And we said, well, we're going to split that. We're going to only charge people $5, and we'll pick up the other $5. The cost went down fairly soon to $5, and we kept the price at $5. Now the price is under $5, say it's $3.50, and we're still charging $5. Now, if we weren't charging for these cards, a lot of the concerns we have would go away, because that's part of the barrier for people at very low income is this initial thing you got to pay to play, and that's a concern. Getting them to them is one thing, but the cost is part of the thing. So I'm not sure whether we should still be charging for these. There's an argument for charging something because of the inherent value of the card and all that. But we could be charging a buck or two and we'd be eliminating a lot of the problem. I see no reason for us to charge more than it costs us to buy the cards. So that's number one. Number two, on the communications, there are a number of issues. And I have to say that, you know, I haven't seen a lot so far, but the presentation said that there's been an extensive communications effort. Communications have been far-reaching. The hangar thing that was described is very interesting. I've not seen any of those on a bus. There wasn't one on the bus I was on this morning. Someone today handed me this grip card that's been, I guess, handed around, but I haven't seen one. As a bus user, I haven't yet encountered it, which doesn't mean it hasn't happened, but there's one bus rider who hasn't seen that stuff yet. So, you know, in general, I'm concerned that we get an information out that reaches people. Wilson was talking about the bus operator being there to walk people through. Now, let me say, I really hope that by January 4th, this is the kind of organization in which every one of the, how many thousand bus drivers do we have now?
Over 3,000.
Over 3,000. See themselves as customer service representatives who want to help all those people that get on their bus. We certainly have some now who do. On the other hand, not easy riding a bus. They have a lot of things on their mind. And you're very conscious of that often when you get on a bus. And not all of our folks out there are the people who are likely to walk someone through a financial transaction. You know, I think you have to be realistic about, you know, and I imagine we'd get quite a debate if we had bus operators here about whether or not it's reasonable to expect them to do that. But I think as a practical matter, whatever we think, you'd need a whole other side of implementation of this. So let me ask you, is there training being made for operators about this so that they know there's a set of expectations for them in terms of how they have to handle customer inquiries and all that? Is that already underway?
Yes. In fact, we've been meeting internally at least every 2 weeks, if not weekly. And part of our regular meeting, part of the group of people sitting around that table, every single time we meet, is somebody from bus training. And so they've been integral to this whole process as we move forward. And they have been setting up the training for bus operators, just as a refresher. How do you use this? And a reminder about the customer service aspect.
Okay, so in other words, for instance, if someone on that table over there were to leave this meeting and go say, I'm going to go talk to a bus operator, and she decided to just go ask a random bus operator. So, you know, have they been training you about this coming paper transfer elimination and how it's going to affect customers and how you're going to have to walk people through the financial transaction at that machine? You're confident that they'd say, oh, yeah, they've taught us all about that. We're going to do this, this, and this.
If I might, sir, that is not what she said.
Oh, okay.
We are in the process of training our operators, and there are those operators who know it anyhow, as you mentioned, who provide that level of customer service. We're training others, so all of our operators have not been trained yet, and I just was asking Mr. Francis if he could get the status on the number who we've trained. I know we've been communicating with them one-on-one or in groups. I've been doing that personally. They understand this is coming. They understand it's going to require, particularly the first couple of weeks, an additional amount of effort on their part for people to understand the transition. But I can't tell you, it would be a false statement to say if you walked out today and asked every bus driver if they've been trained on this, because that's not the case.
But by Christmas time?
the time we go to implement this, people will understand what their role is with regard to the customer's needs here. And, I mean, if you were to, one question I would say you could ask bus operators is, how happy are you that we're eliminating these bus paper transfers? I mean, our operators are getting assaulted on a monthly basis because people are stealing these smart chip cards.
Transfers.
I'm sorry. I'm knee deep in this too much.
I understand that there's benefits to everyone, including operators, in doing this. The question is, if there's a set of expectations being put on operators, you need to know that they know that.
Absolutely.
And that's quite an operation as well, given the
Indeed.
Number of people that know how to do this. I've got one other item.
Point of personal privilege.
Sorry?
Point of personal privilege.
Point of personal privilege.
Yeah. I would prefer if you not try to sell the board on this concept and you provide us with facts. When the board member asked you about, I didn't particularly like the fact that you asked whether or not, if you ask the bus driver, they will tell you that they want to eliminate paper transfers. We could really do without that. I think the factual information that we need and the question that was asked at the very beginning was whether or not the bus operators have been trained. This is a serious matter to us. It's very important that we know this type of information. And really, the kind of comments that you've made, I don't find very tasteful. I don't do that very often. It's not something that I do in professional to anyone, but I would ask that you not do that.
Chairman, did you have any additional
My final question?
Question
is, suppose somebody boards a bus and they've got their kids with them. Now, I know in systems, for instance, in New York, you can do something getting on the train that you can't do here because we have differing fares and exit matters, so that you can take your one card that has money on it and go 1, 2, 3, take you and your two kids through. Now, I understand, of course, why that isn't possible. You understand why it's not possible on a rail system, but on a bus system, we don't take when you alight, you don't go through any system. It's only getting on anyway. So, why is it not possible on a bus to, strike your card, say, multiple times to bring along other people in your party?
Well, let me say on the issue just with children that. When you pay for a bus ride, you're also entitled to bring up to two children under the age of 5 with you. So that's one way.
Under the tariff, they're free.
Exactly. So that's one
thing. My 7-year-old and my 9-year-old.
Right. So then in that instance, you're outside the tariff at that point. And the question about being able to use the smart card multiple times is just the way that the card has been set up. I'm not familiar with whether the technology exists to make that more flexible.
I was under the impression that, in fact, you can tap it several times on a bus and get multiple people through.
I'm looking at our technical people, and they're shaking their heads.
Chris is saying no.
Yeah, my kids have their.
You certainly could adjust it to do that. Chris, is there anything that would prevent you from being able to undo that and allow multiple taps?
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask that this be looked into. In fact, you don't use it like the rail system because you don't use it going out on the bus system the way you do on the rail system. Yeah, I'm sure there are issues involved, but what I'd like to find out in a subsequent report whether this is something that is like a minor technical change that could be done, and then therefore if there are policy issues about doing it or not, or if it's something that is a major technical problem. Because it may be that this is an area where we can add a level of convenience that would help ease this problem for a number of users. I suspect that some of the users who would benefit by these are some of those that we're most concerned about, because people, and it's a lot tougher doing it when in fact you do have a bunch of kids in tow, and it's more complicated if somebody's going with you and they don't have fare. And, if you say, we can go take a bus, and I have my card, but the person with me doesn't, they're from out of town, something else like that, it could become much more convenient if that's all I have to do. Mm-hmm. So if they could look into this and tell us at the next meeting, or my memo or whatever, whether this is something we can incorporate into this, I think the board would like to see that.
I believe we could
Thank
do
you,
it.
Mr. Chairman.
by memo, and just for point of clarification, to make sure we understand it correctly, you're talking about the bus system?
Yes.
I just wanted to add my concern about the communications part, and I do agree that the sooner we implement it, the more information is going to go out and the more interest is going to go out. You said you had someone that was a, I guess, larger vendor of some sort that you would be sharing to distribute these or to work with the cards?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I'm following the reference there. Was it regarding the outreach to social service agencies?
Right.
Yeah.
Who would be some of the places where they could get access to load and reload?
Oh, I'm sorry. The places where you can load additional value. The one point that I had brought up here was number one, the places where you could purchase the card. Mm-hmm. That will be expanding. It'll be tripling. By mid-December. We're in negotiations right now with a retailer that has significant presence throughout the region here, and so that will be one way to kind of accommodate that. The second question, I guess, is about where you can load value onto your card. And right now, we have obviously all the rail stations where you can load value, but also it's important to remember that all of our buses throughout the whole region are places where you can load value onto your card. So that's one. We also have another two dozen or so more point-of-sale units where you can load value. Those are currently being finalized, and the next few weeks we'll have an additional 24 throughout the region in various places.
Well, one community that I think is, and I looked and I started reading it, it said markets, and you really meant markets in general and not markets. Food market.
Yes.
For example, many of our language minority food markets or grocery stores are equally as important as those larger ones.
Yes.
And I hope that we are considering them because it's a great opportunity to bridge that barrier and reach that population.
One of the things that we've done in the past few weeks was to get a UPC symbol for that card, so that, and that's one of the things that you have to overcome in order to get that kind of penetration. And so we'll certainly consider that that these other kinds of smaller markets as alternative places to be selling.
Mr. Grant, you're really going to just, Mr. McHale.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms.
Hutch. The passes that are shown on page 87 that would still be in existence. Do we have the capability today for people to purchase those short-term rail passes, bus passes, et cetera, on a smart trip card?
That was, I think that was addressed, right, the short answer is no, not right now. But I believe that's part of the discussion
we
had.
Yes, for next year.
Right, so when you're saying that they're still going to be available and still be sold indefinitely?
Yes, well, unless the board has another.
What would be the, if we're trying to get people generically away from paper and using smart trip cards, why would we still think that they should be available?
They offer a discount and the ease. It's less expensive for multiple users to buy the weekly bus pass, for an example. And if we eliminated that, we would increase their cost in a lot of cases. And I recommend, and our recommendation is that next year, we will be able to have that feature on the smart trip cost on cards, and we not eliminate that until that occurs. I think that would have a significant impact on low income riders.
I wasn't suggesting we should until the technology was there. I just wanted to make sure that we had that capability in the future. Okay, and the only other minor thing on the print advertising, I looked at the Virginia list that you have there, and I have some ideas of some other local papers that are heavily circulated in Fairfax in particular, and some of the lower income neighborhoods that are not listed here that I think would be worthwhile. So I'll probably get listed here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McKay. Mr. Giancola?
No additional
questions. Mr. Mr. Benjamin?
Yes, I have been handed by staff the resolution for the approval of fare increases, which we adopted on December 13, 2007, in which the operative section says that we were increasing the fares as shown in Attachment A. And here, let me read you two lines from Attachment A. One says, after 1 year transition, bus-to-bus transfers issued on smart cards only. And another line, after 1 year of transition, rail-to-bus transfers issued on smart cards only. So at that time, we approved both balance transfer and the elimination of paper transfers.
Bus to bus? What about bus to rail?
Rail to bus. We already had bus to rail. Bus to rail transfers are already there.
No, I'm sorry.
Rail to bus. You're right. Rail to bus is there, only on smart cards. I think that was the intent. It is what is in here. It says issued on smart cards only.
But it doesn't say bus to rail.
It does not say, you're correct. It does not say bus to rail.
Well, thank you for the
But it says rail to bus right. on smart cards.
So bus to rail, we assumed, would be implemented when the technology was in place.
And in fact, you can't really do one without the other logically, but you could.
Thank you for the clarification, Mr. Benjamin. Do you have further questions?
No, I would like to point out that, to the best of my knowledge, you can, in fact, put passes on our existing Smart Trip cards. The problem with putting passes on is you can only put one pass on. It's got to be done at a central location, and then you can't change it without going back to that central location. So it can be done. It's just difficult and inconvenient for our customers
today.
And that's what will change with this contract is you'll be able to do it at Fair Gates or at Fair Vendors.
Thank you, Mr. Benjamin. Ms. Hewlett?
Yes, I don't have much more to add. I think it's all been said. But I was remiss in not welcoming Mr. Albert, so consider me part of the welcoming retinue here. And secondly, I stated my position earlier, but I did want to reiterate that this part of the communication efforts were, and advertising efforts were a key component. I mean, everybody said that, but that I feel very, very strongly about that as well. And also have some additional recommendations for Prince George's County as well.
Thank you.
And that was it.
Thank you, Ms. Hewlett. Mayor Yule? Okay. Mr. Albert, do you have further comments?
Nothing else.
I just wanted to ask one simple question, which is people who are buying the weekly bus pass, I assume that's a great many people. A significant number anyway?
15% of people who board buses use a flash pass of some sort.
Right. And now how will our bus to rail transfer work in those cases?
There won't be one available for people who use the bus, the
it's
weekly
only
bus passes.
Through the use of the smart trip card,
only through the use of the
which
smart
is the full fare card, that this will be available.
That's consistent with what we do now.
Right. Just so, but I think we have some educating to do with people so they can understand all of that.
It would be the same.
Right.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Further discussion on this matter? I think the only other point that was raised by Mr. Zimmerman, and I do want to, and it's also Mr. Linton has raised the point and others, is the question of whether or not we should, under any circumstance, be selling smart trip cards for more than our cost. And I think that I'd like to request for our next meeting, if you would, please, we should have a fiscal impact analysis of this so that we can see what would be the fiscal impact if we sold the smart trip cards at our cost. And then let's include a fiscal impact of what would happen if we gave them away.
Would you like that for the November 20th board meeting? Given the period of time we're talking about, I don't want to wait until
the Is that all right? Yeah. Is that all right? If you can do it, that would be good. Okay, good. There being no further discussion, and there being no further business, this meeting of the Customer Services Operations and Safety Committee is adjourned.
Can we have a 5-minute break and then do the Finance Committee?
You're the chairman.
Okay. 5-minute break, please.